the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 165th day, with the death toll surpassing 31,800, mostly women and children. France's UN envoy says the Gaza situation is absolutely catastrophic, urging the international body to overcome its inaction and to declare an immediate ceasefire. And Israeli occupation forces carry out night raids on several areas of the West Bank, abducting at least two young Palestinians. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The Gaza Strip is reeling from endless Israeli bombardment, with its people remaining in a state of despair and agony. The regime has carried out fresh attacks across the territory, including in Rafah Governorate, where at least 14 Palestinians have lost their lives.
There's no safe area. They're saying that this is a safe area, but there are no safe areas. They're hitting in every direction. They don't care about people. They're hitting everywhere.
A number of others were also injured in the airstrikes on Rafah. In central Gaza, Israel's artillery shelled the vicinity of both Nuseirat and the Barej refugee camps. Several neighborhoods in Gaza City were bombed as well. Israel unleashed its genocide in Gaza in early October. Over 31,800 Palestinians have been killed so far, most of them women and children. The war rages on while Gazans are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid severe food shortages and other devastating impacts of Israeli bombardment and siege. Mutaba Masaba is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Balah. Muti, welcome. We understand that in Rafah, 14 have been killed due to an airstrike. What do you have on us for that and, of course, any other developments?
Well, actually, the Israeli occupation forces continued their persistent attacks against Palestinian people and the Palestinian residential buildings, particularly in Gaza City. Over the last couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces committed another appalling massacre against the Palestinian civilians after destroying a residential building in the central part of Gaza City. At least 15 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were reportedly killed and massacred in that house after the Israeli warplanes destroyed the house over their heads. It's worth mentioning that the Israeli occupation forces are still hitting those areas, I mean in Gaza City. More residential buildings were destroyed, particularly in the western parts of Gaza City, as the Israeli artillery also continued their artillery shelling against those areas, particularly the western parts and the surrounding areas of the Ashifa Martyrs Hospital. Dozens of the Palestinian casualties were reported as a result of those continuous and chronic attacks that reach all residential buildings and all facilities and even the infrastructure in that area. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation warplanes also continued another alarming massacre in Jabalia after destroying a residential building. At least 5 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed. The person that was targeted mainly and basically of that attack was Raed al-Banna. He was in charge of coordinating the efforts of distributing the humanitarian aid to the people in Jabalia refugee camp. He's the second person after the Palestinian police officer Faiq al-Mabhouh, who was killed yesterday after the Israeli occupation forces managed to attack Ashifa Hospital and killed him in that hospital. So we are talking about deliberate attacks of the Israeli occupation forces against the Palestinian people and particularly against the Palestinian personals who are in charge of distributing the humanitarian aid to the people, particularly in the northern part of Gaza Strip. And this comes in the context, according to multiple people here and according to the Palestinian people, this comes in the context of the persistent and the continuous Israeli war against the Palestinian civilians, and as the Israelis are still using starvation as a weapon of war against the Palestinian people. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces committed another crime here in the central area of Gaza Strip after targeting a group of the Palestinian civilians who were attempting to return to Gaza City. The Israeli snipers actually opened their gunfire towards those Palestinian civilians. A Palestinian civilian was reportedly shot dead over that gunfire, and his dead body actually was brought and evacuated to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. So the current situation is still catastrophic and hazardous, particularly when it comes to Gaza City, that is subjected to heavy bombardments and attacks of the Israeli artillery and the Israeli relentless airstrikes. Over to you.
Thank you for that. Muti Masaba, they're talking to us from Darabala. Thank you, Muti. Moving on, the U.S. Secretary of State has expressed concern over the acute food shortage in the Gaza Strip and the dire humanitarian crisis there.
Again, according to the most respected measure of these things, 100% of the population in Gaza is at severe levels of acute food insecurity. That's the first time an entire population has been so classified. We also see, again, according to, in this case, the United Nations, 100%, the totality of the population, is in need of humanitarian assistance.
Lincoln made the comments in the Philippines before heading to Egypt and Saudi Arabia, where he would make a new push for a ceasefire in Gaza. Ironically enough, Lincoln's so-called concern over the food shortage in Gaza and his attempts to secure a peace deal come as Washington has time and again vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolutions on the ceasefire. Well, France's ambassador and permanent representative to the UN has called on the Security Council to take action on the dire situation in Gaza.
So far, the Security Council has only been able to adopt two humanitarian resolutions, which, by the way, are not implemented. These councils need to do more, to do it now, and take up its responsibility. It cannot wait any longer. So this is why France requested close consultation on the situation in Gaza today. We want the members of this council to have a honest conversation on which measures can be taken by this council to stop this conflict. Well, we are supposed to take different steps. Now the emergency is to do what I just said, an immediate ceasefire during Ramadan, release of hostages and full humanitarian access. So this is what the Security Council should do now, not next week. I'm talking about the next 24 or 48 hours. There is no reason to procrastinate further. No reason.
Rubio also described the humanitarian situation in the besieged Palestinian territory as absolutely catastrophic. He argued that this is not a natural disaster, but a war that should stop now and that the Security Council cannot continue to procrastinate. France has been pushing for a ceasefire in Israel's war on Gaza. However, the 15-member UN body has failed to pass resolutions due to constant U.S. vetoes. Since Israel launched its genocidal war in Gaza in early October, Washington has vetoed three draft resolutions, two of them calling for an immediate ceasefire. In our news review program, we discussed with our guests about the growing calls, including from France, for a coordinated international action to establish an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Let's take a listen. Hassan Hubsai is a Palestinian scientist and author who joins us from Bethlehem. We also have Barry Grossman, international lawyer, who joins us from Bali, Indonesia. Gentlemen, welcome. Hassan Hubsai, I'll first start with you. The French ambassador showing to the UN, showing his frustration, saying that something needs to be done, but the EU as a whole is partly also responsible for what is happening in the Gaza Strip. So that claim somewhat falls on deaf ears, so to speak, because they are the ones also partly responsible. But really, then comes to the U.S. role in this whole genocidal conflict. Isn't the U.S. the one that also should be held responsible on a large scale on this genocidal war that's taking place?
Yes, indeed. Thank you for having this discussion, because it's very, very important. The world has failed Gaza. It has failed human rights. The UN resolutions that have been made, Israel is in violation of over 35 UN Security Council resolutions, including 242 and 338, which call acquisition of territory by force illegal, and Israel is occupying Gaza and the West Bank since 1967, and also the Golan Heights. So Israel violates UN Security Council resolutions that are already adopted, and that's not counting the dozens and dozens of UN Security Council resolutions that the U.S. vetoes, as your report indicated. The U.S. vetoed at least three resolutions, and they used threat of veto on several others just in the past few months since this genocide, latest round of genocide started. So I think France is hypocritical in many ways. You know, they support Israel, they support it financially, they support it with military equipment and weapons. They supported it at the UN in numerous occasions. So they cannot claim now suddenly that they saw the light or that they are calling for a ceasefire. If they are calling for a ceasefire, they need to stand up to who prevents a ceasefire, and that is their patron, the United States. And they are not willing to stand up to the United States. Instead, what we see is more of the same and more genocide going on every day, every minute, and the world is silent.
Barry Gorsman, do you agree with what our guest there says? Especially, I'd like to ask you about what the French UN ambassador said, where he said something needs to be done now within the next 24 to 48 hours. Who is he addressing that part of his statement to?
Absolutely, I agree with what our colleague said. I think it doesn't take much imagination to appreciate just how hypocritical France has been. I mean, we can give credit where credit's due, but basically passing the buck back to the Security Council or even the ICC without the ICJ, without without taking a firm position in opposition to the players that are making all this happening, rings rather hollow. And frankly speaking, the level of political and institutional inertia in the face of this massive crime against humanity, which includes all manner of war crimes and, of course, ethnic cleansing and genocide and all the rest, it's truly astounding. Anybody who's still breathing only needs to make themselves aware of what's taking place in Gaza on a daily basis, and in no small part in the West Bank too, to appreciate just how outrageously unlawful the occupation is conducting itself in current situation, and really everybody should be standing up. Every nation should be standing up and demanding a ceasefire, without simply talking about, you know, asking. You know, it's not good enough to say that Hamas would release its prisoners of war when the occupation has something in the order of 10,000 prisoners taken unlawfully, very often without any charges or trial or right of appeal, women and children and everything else. And I think somewhere in there has to be a way to reach a resolution. But if there's not, it's high time that nations started calling out the big players, namely the United Kingdom, the United States, and even France itself, and of course the court. As for the UN, the fact that we still have a Security Council with five permanent members that enjoy an absolute power of veto is outrageous. Certainly, that veto power should never be allowed to be invoked in order to stop a program to resolve what ultimately is a crime against humanity.
Very well. Thank you so much for that. We do appreciate your comments there. That's Mazen Umsaya, Palestinian scientist and author. And thank you, Barry Grossman, international lawyer from Bali, Indonesia. With that, we come to an end for this news review. The former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has hailed the U.S. Senate Majority Leader for urging early Israeli elections to replace the regime's current premier, Benjamin Netanyahu. Olmert sent a letter to Chuck Schumer several days after the Democratic senator called Netanyahu a major obstacle to peace in Gaza. The former Israeli premier lauded Schumer for his courage to express how traditional supporters of Israel feel today. Olmert added that Netanyahu is unable to fulfill the responsibilities assigned to him. Schumer's call for the replacement of Netanyahu was also praised by Israeli opposition leader Yair Lapid. You said that Netanyahu is losing Israel's biggest supporters. Schumer's remarks have signaled a widening rift between the Israeli regime and the U.S., a country that has been complicit in the Gaza genocide. The call for a snap election has angered Netanyahu, who responded by saying that Israel is not a banana republic. The Israeli military has carried out fresh raids across the occupied West Bank as the regime presses ahead with its offensive against Palestinians. In the latest such attacks, Israeli forces raided the town of Yamon, west of the city of Jenin, as well as a Palestinian refugee camp east of the city of Nablus. The regime forces abducted several people after storming Palestinian homes. Clashes also erupted between Israeli troops and resistance forces, which targeted soldiers and bulldozers with explosive devices. The Israeli military has intensified its violent raids across the West Bank since October 7, the day when the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands abducted during Israeli incursions into the occupied towns and cities ever since. The Yemeni Foreign Ministry has censured a U.S. Security Council statement against the country's anti-Israeli operations in the Red Sea. The ministry said the UNSC move reflects the body's submission to America's interest and its support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Sana'a also blasted the council for its inaction toward the daily massacre of Palestinians. The Yemeni ministry pledged that the forces would continue their operations in the Red Sea until Israel ends its onslaught on Gaza. Reactions came after the 15-member council condemned the attacks on commercial vessels in the Red Sea, while urging restraint to avoid further escalation. This despite the Yemeni armed forces to have repeatedly announced that all ships, except those heading to Israeli ports, are free and safe to sail through the strategic water. However, recently, they have also targeted American and British ships, retaliation for the two countries' aggression against Yemen. That does it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Conversation. You're still tuned into The Conversation, your weekly alternative probe of political events and current affairs around Ireland. I'm joined by our special guests, Dr. Mark Humphreys from Ireland-Israel Alliance, along with Hamza Tortsis from the Sapient Institute. Mark had asked, do you see the impact that it's had on Jews?
Of course I do. I consider myself empathic. The impact it has had, of course, is going to be traumatic. If that's how they perceive things, I'm not denying the impact, whether it's propaganda or not. So I do empathize from that perspective. But at the end of the day, I already said there's been five equivalent on October the 7th since 2008 from a numbers perspective, from killing innocent human beings, from killing Palestinians. Why the moral asymmetry? Why do you believe Israeli blood is worth more than Palestinian blood? Because you're not even bothered to address. Bothered to address that reality. There are five equivalent October the 7th inflicted on the Palestinians before October the 7th.
Just
be honest, you don't care about Palestinians.
What I want for Palestinians.
You're racist, right? Or ignorant, one of those
what
two.
What I want for Palestinians.
You want them to be impressed and you want them to respond to the oppression in the way that you want.
I've been clear my whole life. What I want for Palestinians is I want them to live in peace and prosperity.
Okay. And for me, stop the apartheid.
Hold on. For me,
illegal occupations.
Hold on. For me, the fundamental thing that is stopping Palestinians and has been stopping them since before they were called Palestinians, which a name that emerged in the 60s.
That's not true.
The thing that is stopping Palestinians from living in peace and prosperity is their own ideas. The ideas that are in their heads. Now, that makes this potentially...
Do you know their opinions, the whole of the Palestinians? You know all of the ideas?
Let me just try and make the point, which is, in some conflicts in the world, You just have to fight. You have to keep up the struggle. You've no chance at all. You're being brutalized by some neighboring dictator. The struggle is, you know, perhaps decimating your country, but if you give up the struggle, you'll just be decimated even more by the dictator, whatever. There are many, perhaps most wars in history are like that. You just have to fight whoever is up against you. The Israel war, I believe, is not and never has been like that. The war between Israel and the Arabs and then Israel and the Palestinians is a war where if the Palestinians modified their ideas, everybody could live in peace and prosperity. And it's harder to see on the West Bank, where there's no agreed definition of territory. It was unbelievably easy to see in Gaza from 2005 to 2023. All the Gazans had to do was stop, and they had a solution. It was right there waiting for them for 18 years, but they wouldn't take it. Instead, they wanted to continue the war. They fired rockets at Israel, which inevitably brought Israel back to attack Hamas, to do aerial bombing, because sending in troops on the ground means dead Israelis, so they did aerial bombing. They did send in troops. I've met some of the troops who went in on the ground, but very few went in until 2023.
Because they're cowards, that's why.
Well, that's why they wear nappies. Hold on. Calm. Right. First of all...
I am calm. I said they wear nappies. It's a fact.
First of all, if they go in on the ground, they die, right? Any troops that go in the ground die. But also, combat on the ground is also very dangerous for local civilians. Yeah. They die as well, too. It just escalates.
So how does this actually present a case against... You've mentioned some untruths there, but no, how does this go against my presentation? Well, we've shown intent, and we've shown the actions that support the intent.
There's no intent.
They said the ministers, people of positions of power, we have over 100 statements, including the IDF, a general, the people of significant power, think tanks, having genocidal statements, and the dumb bombs, around 50% of the bombs are not even laser guided, right? Just to annihilate everything.
Okay, well, let me say a few things.
That's not genocide?
Okay, Hamza, let Mark just...
Let me say a few things to the Corbis, right? I don't agree with statements talking about Amalekites and stuff like that. I understand anger and hurt and fury on the Israeli side. I mean, I can feel it, and I'm not Israeli. I can understand that anger, but I don't agree with Amalekite-type statements or anything like that. So what you have to look at is what's actually happening. Right? So what's actually happening compared to those statements? So, for example, one of the first things that happened was an announcement for civilians to get out.
I've already mentioned that.
Northern Gaza, right? And get into southern Gaza.
And then you just bomb when they're evacuating. You kill them when they're evacuating.
That's not what happened.
Aerial analysis has proven that.
We'll give the figures for which EuroMed have given the Swiss monitoring group. And they have given the figures of almost 30,000 Palestinians killed. Now, to go back to that point, the bombing of northern Gaza, how can it be said that it was precision bombing when there were that many civilians killed? I just want to get to the core of that. Do you believe that's just collateral damage? Or do the Israelis just believe that's collateral damage? Or how do we square that circle?
Okay, so Israel set itself the job of destroying a group that controls all of Gaza, essentially, Hamas. So it's an unbelievably ambitious job, which it has never attempted before, to take an entire territory and wipe out the militant terrorist group that's in charge of it. Now, probably every fact I say, Hamza, is going to challenge, but...
You're providing no citations, no evidence, nothing.
But Gaza north and south Gaza north and south is practically an armed camp in the sense that there's a tunnel system of several hundred kilometers. Presumably, you agree that exists. The tunnel system is going underneath apartment blocks. It's going underneath mosques. They found openings to the tunnels. In mosques, in schools, in private houses. There was a report there that the IDF said that every single mosque they had searched so far on the ground and every single school that they had searched on the ground had either weapons are a tunnel underneath it. Now, you may not believe any of this. I certainly believe that's true, because that is the way Hamas would fight. It is the kind of morality that Hamas would believe in, the tactics that they would use. So it's an incredibly hard job to clear out Gaza, which is why they've started doing it sector by sector. They wanted to move the population down to the south. Now they're dropping leaflets. They've divided the south up into zones, and the leaflets are saying things like, here in this red sector, we are going to be, there's going to be fighting and bombing in this red sector today. Move along this road into these green sectors. So now, it's not very nice for people who live there to be told with a message from the enemy from the sky, get out of your house and you may never see it again, move down the road. But why are they doing this, is the point, if their aim is genocide? And show me any army that would do this in the history of the world.
But this is a red herring. This is totally irrelevant. The point
why
is,
are they doing it?
Okay, so
no, you
why would the Gazans believe the IDF when the IDF have told them to move, and when they've moved, they've been bombed?
They haven't bombed them.
The aerial analysis has been shown by independent entities.
They bombed the Hamas fighters.
No, they have. Well, women, children?
They bombed.
Children?
They bombed.
Is a child a Hamas fighter?
Well...
Is a child a Hamas fighter?
Well, if you were saying...
Are 11,000 children Hamas fighters?
Well, hold on.
It's genocidal language, dehumanizing language.
Are children fighting for Hamas?
Are children Hamas fighters?
By definition...
And are they guilty?
If we know...
Should they be bombed?
Hold on.
Should we kill children? Is that what you believe?
If we know nothing other than it's a child, then they're not a Hamas fighter. If they're under 10 years old, they're not a Hamas fighter. If they're over 10 years old, are over 10-year-olds being used by Hamas? Because I've seen plenty of evidence that they are. As spotters, as runners, as carriers of ammunition.
So basically, that language is basically blurring the boundary between a combatant and a non-combatant.
It's not language. I'm talking about what Hamas are doing.
So you're basically saying it's okay. Because of that, we should kill everybody. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if I was saying that, wouldn't I say it rather than you?
Well, I don't know. You've said a lot of things without any basis.
Rather than you having to say, oh, so you're saying that.
Let's think about your framing. This is very important. The way you're framing it as if there are two state actors that are fighting each other. It's not symmetrical. There's an asymmetry. When you're talking about Gaza that was left alone in 2005, it's still known under international law as an occupied territory. Secondly, they control even the daily calories. Academics have called it perverse, degrading, and unlivable in many places. So from that perspective, the way you're framing it as if there are two state actors and there's a war. It's not a war. In actual fact, Israel, under international law, has no right to defend itself. Why? Because it's already in
Israel has no right to defend itself.
Yeah, according to international law. Let me explain why.
So after 7th of October,
can I explain
Israel
why?
Should do nothing.
I'm not saying that. Listen to what I'm saying.
What should Israel do then?
They should stop the apartheid regime. They should stop the illegal settlements. They should stop oppressing the Palestinians. They should stop killing children. They should stop forcing imprisoning children. The list goes on and on and on. That's what they should do. You want peace? Don't be an oppressor. If you want peace, don't have apartheid. There are 65 laws that discriminate against Arab Israelis and Palestinians.
We're on to a new
topic. Are you happy with apartheid?
We're on to a new topic every 2 seconds.
Are you happy with apartheid?
Hold on. My problem with
sounds
this,
like it.
My problem with this debate is there's a new topic every 2 seconds.
You're not directly answering my questions. That's why.
Let Mark speak.
I think we ought to dig into some topics and go a bit slower. I'm happy to discuss all these topics, by the way, but a new topic every 2 seconds is a bit hard to cope with.
No, because I'm just challenging you.
We need to stick with the topic.
I'm challenging the misframing.
We need to stick to the topic with which the reasons why you're here. I think we need to stick that. So go ahead, Mark. Make your point.
There's about 100 trucks a day going into in aid. Going into in food.
Not answering the question.
Hold on. Going into Gaza right now. The issue, sorry, if we're back to the issue of genocidal intent. Well, the question is, why are these leaflets being dropped from the sky? Not just that, but phone calls as well. There's been several million text messages, many thousands of phone calls, because they're much more human intensive. There are accounts from Gazans. One of them was the caretaker of an apartment block. He said Israelis were on the phone with him for 2 hours explaining who they were attacking, when, why his people had to get out of the apartment block and when it was safe to go back. Now, my point is not that absolutely everything Israel ever does in a war is going to be perfect and that can be justified. That wouldn't be true for any war in human history. People make errors and people get enthusiastic and people misidentify and people do commit crimes as well. But my point is that there are too many things that don't fit in with your simple claim that Israel just wants to kill everybody. And we start off with all the warnings.
No, I didn't actually say that.
Genocide is killing everyone in the territory.
No, right? For example, you believe in the Armenian genocide, right? You believe that the Ottomans committed an Armenian genocide. Is that true?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But I don't think we should talk about that.
No, I'm not saying that. 10 minutes. I want to show your maybe inconsistent principles here, because there is no proof of intent for genocide there, yet you believe it's a genocide. Also, the other Armenians towards the east were untouched. So a genocide doesn't mean, even according to your own perspective...
At the risk of discussing it, they drove them all into the desert.
Yeah, but you're missing the point, though. But they want to drive the Gazans, and they've been starving the Gazans, too. I'm showing the inconsistency, because it's related to the point. It's about genocide. You believe in a genocide, but you can't prove intent of a genocide. The point is, you have an entity, the Gaza Strip, that the Israelis have full control over the water, the electricity, and the food, to the degree that they said there can be only this many calories per day, according to academics. So my point here is, how is that now an independent state, and your framing of that there is asymmetrical war going on?
Well, how come...
That's my point. So my point
How come before 2023, if Israel was so evil, they were providing electricity and water to Gaza? How come?
Well, yeah.
If they're so evil.
Yeah, but they were controlling it.
But if they're so evil, why didn't they just cut it off before 2023?
Well, wait, hold on a second.
They were providing electricity and water to Gaza.
Yeah, but if Gaza had its own... And that just proves my point. So you've actually proved my point, which is Gaza doesn't have control.
Gaza...
If Israel's providing water, electricity... Gaza doesn't have control.
Gaza...
So how can they flourish when they don't have control?
Gaza before 2023, of course it didn't have full control of its own territory. I never claimed it did. What I claimed was that there was a route for them to peace, prosperity. For example, Israel was
providing... they're occupied.
They weren't occupied.
International law, Gaza is considered an occupied entity even post-2005.
Hold on. Israel...
Do you believe in international law?
Just not a new topic.
Yeah, but it's not a new topic. You're making a statement that's just making things up.
As I say, Hamza, it's a new topic every 2 seconds.
It's related, actually.
They are related, but let's spend a bit of time on a topic and then go on to the next one.
Sure.
What I'm saying is that fighting an enemy like Hamas is unbelievably difficult.
No, but you're framing it. Okay, let me explain why this framing is all wrong. Number one, I want to justify the point I mentioned earlier. This is international law. According to valid interpretations of international law, Israel is already in an aggressive position because it's an illegal occupier. And by virtue of that, they have no right. The idea I have a right to defend myself is, well, you're already in aggressive stance, right? So therefore, they're in an aggressive posture. So, and from that perspective, legally, they have no right. Now, you could talk about the moral question, that's fine. But legally, they don't have any right to defend themselves because they're an illegal occupier. And you're just framing as it's just Hamas. Notwithstanding Hamas and Islamic Jihad, they're proscribed terrorist groups according to the United Kingdom. There are other factions within the resistance that are legal, and they're using the international right according to the Geneva Convention and international law to actually resist an occupying force. They're actually allowed to resist an occupying force. This is international law.
Yeah, look. I'll tell you what.
Is it international law? Are you allowed to resist an occupying force?
Here's a question. Gaza is not occupied.
It is occupied.
Now, right?
No. It is occupied. According to international law, because Israel had control of resources...
Gaza is going to be occupied now for decades.
Listen, this is rhetoric. Listen.
No, it's not rhetoric.
According to international law, notwithstanding the fact that the Israeli settlers left, illegal settlers, may I add, Because Israel had control of the population to a degree, electricity, water, and so on and so forth, it's still considered as an occupied force according to international law. So you can't say it's not occupied because it's still considered occupied. This is why there is a resistance movement. This is why there are valid legal factions.
It's not like there's a resistance movement.
There, of course, there is. It's not just Hamas and Islamic Jihad. There are other factions that are trying to resist the occupier.
Gazans' issues since 2005. Are all self-inflicted. What Gazans could have done was they could have chosen a different path after 2005. They could have said, well, our brothers in the West Bank can deal with their own lives. We're going to pursue our life here. There's a border, and that's the way...
So let's stay occupied, right?
Okay, guys, so in all that's been said, and to conclude, how do we now see, and I'm going to ask you first, Mark, how do we now see the two-state solution and how do we move forward?
Okay, I think the two-state solution is dead as a dodo at the moment. I say at the moment, the dodo is not coming back, but dead as a dodo probably for the next couple of decades. It was already in severe trouble the Second Intifada. I think the Second Intifada really killed off the idea. The idea of a two-state solution is that some border could be agreed, that Israel would exist and some Palestinian state would exist, and that by doing that, by defining borders, there would be less war, not more war. Now, Israelis fundamentally now believe that any such border, no matter what it was, would lead to more war. Would lead to a horrific war. So let's say some deal was agreed and some Israeli government was stupid enough to sign up to it for some border on the West Bank, and maybe some settlements were kept and some were closed, and there's some border. The problem is most Israelis, I think, would now feel that that would be another Gaza, that then heavy weapons would be brought in, perhaps artillery, into the West Bank, rockets would be coming through 24/7, and everybody would be, all the terrorists and jihadists would be gathering in the West Bank for the final destruction, the final war to destroy Israel. It would be Gaza times 10. Gaza was a trial run for the two-state solution. It was a trial run. Gazans could have ignored Israel. They could have lived in peace and prosperity. They could have enjoyed their lives. They rejected that. And Palestinians of the West Bank would probably reject it too. So the two-state solution is dead. What happens now, nobody really knows. I had optimism before, not much optimism, but at least a bit, before 7th of October. I have no optimism now. I had a plan that could be followed that I believed in, and I think many Israeli people did, or pro-Israeli people. But I don't think we do know. I don't think Israel knows what it's going to do if later this year it actually destroys Hamas. It's not going to solve its problems on the northern border and the West Bank. It's going to lead to a whole load of new problems in Gaza. You know, are they going to be able to stop a new terrorist group taken over, maybe rebrand it? So I don't think Israel has some kind of answer as to what it's doing. What Israel has is it's in absolute shock that Hamas was able to do this attack on the 7th of October. It's absolutely determined that Hamas will now no longer exist, except maybe in a hotel in Qatar. But it will no longer exist in Gaza. And as I think I said earlier, whatever we say, that's really its plan. But I'm afraid I've no hope really to bring. The only hope in this conflict, which I did mention earlier on, is that Palestinians change their ideas about the future and about what they want. But unfortunately, I really see almost no sign of that. And I see almost no sign that their allies... like Hamza, in their allies in the West and around the world, are even interested in getting them to do that. So I'm afraid there's nothing I can say. The problem can be easily solved if Palestinians decide we'll just compromise, we'll lose some of our territory, we'll have some kind of state, we'll live in peace. War with the Jews was a bad idea. We'll put it all behind us, like Germans in the 1950s. But there's no sign of that happening. Maybe it'll happen among the Gazans. That could be the only possible thing. Maybe after the terrible loss of their war, that they'll be like Germans in the 1950s and they won't want to pursue the struggle anymore in 2025 going forward. But that's a tiny little crumb of hope. I'm afraid I've no hope to give you, I think.
Hamza?
Yeah, so it's interesting that we have othering language, which leads to dehumanization, and dehumanization leads to genocide. The Palestinians change the ideas, as if we know all of the ideas of the Muslim, Christian, Palestinians. The kind of othering that is happening in your language, and also the subtlety between war against Israel, now war against the Jews, is these subtleties, these kind of propaganda techniques, which are quite, in fact, quite devilish. I know you're an atheist, so don't take it personally, because you don't believe in the devil. But the point is, it's a devilish ploy, because it is well known that the Palestinians, Muslims as well in general, have never wanted to fight the Jews. In actual fact, Islam preserved the Jewish community. Philip Mansell's book, Constantinople, has a primary source of a Jewish rabbi that was expelled from Spain because of the Inquisition. He said, come to the land of the Turks, rich are the fruits of the earth, we live in peace and freedom. Amnon Cohen, a Jewish historian, he's got a book called World Within. It's a two-volume book. He collects 1,000 records of the judicial records, the sigil records. And he concludes that although the Jews had the freedom to go to the rabbinical courts, the majority of them, or a substantial number of them, wanted to go to the Qadi, the Islamic judge, because the new justice lived under the Islamic principles. He even goes to the Manushai, and he says women would complain of nafaqa, meaning maintenance of from their husband to the Islamic judge. And I could go on and on and on. Zion Zohar, you could talk about jihad. True jihad is liberation of people. Zion Zohar, another Jewish historian, he talks about the Iberian Peninsula. He says, thus, when the Muslims crossed the Straits of Gibraltar in the Iberian Peninsula, the Jews saw the Muslims as liberators from Christian persecution. And if you look at the treaty of the Prophet Muhammad, upon him be peace himself, he had a treaty with the Jews, with the Jewish tribes, and he said they should not be harmed, and they act as one body. This is unprecedented in history. We're not fighting the Jews, were fighting Zionism. Our job is to take care of all human beings, to give them dignity, and that's extremely important. If you want peace, then don't have apartheid. You can never have, haven't we learned from South Africa? South Africa had to dismantle the apartheid state in order for peace to exist. You cannot have peace with injustice. You cannot have harmony with injustice. You cannot have peace with apartheid. So, remove the apartheid system. Number two, stop illegally occupying someone else's land. Stop growing the settlements. For example, the academic Glenn E. Robinson in The Death of the Two-State Solution, Israel, the Palestinians, and the Arab World in the Age of Netanyahu, says the following. The most important reason for the defeat of the Palestinian National State Building Project has been Israel's settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which have been strongly promoted by Netanyahu since 2009. The preclusion of any serious future withdrawal from the West Bank was the reason why the Likud party put the settlement project on steroids after its 1977 election victory. The Likud's settlement drive was designed to keep the West Bank under permanent Israeli control and had both political and strategic dimensions. The Israelis, the government, never wanted peace, and it's clear from their actions. Also, with regards to the two-state solutions, none of the two-state solutions were truly two-state solutions. It was always a subjugated Palestinian people, always. As Edward Said famously said, that it was an instrument of Palestinian surrender, a Palestinian Versailles. The Palestinians have in effect discounted the unilateral and international acknowledged claim to the West Bank and Gaza. And this, he was referring to the famous Oslo Accords that was basically, you know, famously, they thought this was a great achievement from the Israelis, but in actual fact, it was just further subjugating the Palestinian people, and they had to basically surrender most of their land that belonged to them.
And on that, I want to thank both you gentlemen for coming in today. Mark, Hamza, thank you, and I think there's a lot for us to unpack moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
And that does it for another week. We'd love for you to join the conversation by sharing the link to today's programme to help us grow our audience across all our social media platforms. I'd like to once again thank our special guest, Dr. Mark Humphreys and Hamza Tortsis. In the meantime, the conversation will be back next week with more investigations and analysis. I'm Sean Murray. Bye for now.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about different teachings of the Holy Quran regarding humanity and the verses of the Holy Quran related to human being. In the previous episodes, we talked about different dimensions of the soul. We talked about the heart, qalb, and the intellect, aql. And we ended up talking about the obstacles on the way of reason, aql, in doing its proper function, which is leading human being to perfection. We said that by nature, reason is responsible for telling us the truth from the false, for telling us the righteousness from vicious acts. But sometimes, or unfortunately, most of the times, reason cannot carry out this mission and this duty because of certain reasons, because of certain obstacles. Some of them we counted. The last one we were talking about was conceit and arrogance. A person, because he doesn't want to accept the truth, because he thinks if he fight with truth, it makes him great. It makes him like, I don't know, famous. So they do that, and the verse that we recited said that those who yujadiluna fi ayatillah, those who argue against the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, bighayri sultan, without any solid reason, and fi sudurhum illa kibrun, they, it's only because of the arrogance and conceit that they have in their chest, ma hum bibalighi, and they will not fulfill that arrogance. Why? Because at the end of the day, they're going to take in accountable on the court of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We all are going to go to the afterlife, the death and the things that happen afterward shows that we cannot be too arrogant. Someday everything finishes and what is left from us is the behavior that we had, and all of them are recorded, and everyone will be held accountable for whatever he did or said. So, mahum bibalighi in the verse refers to that this is an unfinished task. It doesn't finish well. At the end of the day, we cannot fight with truth. We cannot fight with the teachings and the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So one hadith that we have in this regard is from Imam Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. It says, "Sharru afwat al-aql al-kibr." The most dangerous, or the most problematic, the most vicious threats for reason is conceit and arrogance. The most vicious threat that stops reason from functioning well is, okay, this is very, I don't know, say strange, this is dangerous, this is something we should take note of, that, again, another hadith that we have, reason means a person accepting the truth, not fighting with, man sara al-haq sara'ah. a person who fights with truth, the truth will prevails over him. So it's not that a person thinks that I can argue against. No. A rational person is a person who not only knows the truth, but accepts the truth. We will have a break and come back to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the first segment of the episode, we were talking about how conceit and arrogance is a threat to reason and to intellect, and how it stops reason from functioning well. One of the functions of intellect was to accept and surrender to truth, and one sign of a wise person is that a wise person does not fight with truth. Yes, being critical is good and it is necessary, but some people think being critical means to always argue or repeat things that you have received the answer before. Or, for example, to try to find out how you can know once if something is established, if a person does not have solid evidence against one narrative, one, I don't know, thing that is from Alamul Ghaib, revelation to the Prophet that has established his position as a Prophet of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the history of mankind, based on miracles, based on the, I don't know, devotion of many people who were actually rational people, great philosophers, great people who were smart. They accepted, they, according to their evaluation, this is different from the message of those who fabricated message against Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So a person fighting with all of this, and then again he claims that this is the result of critical thinking. No, this is not a sign of reason, this is a sign of irrationality. So these are verses of the Holy Quran about the obstacles and the way of reason and intellect. So we go over them. The first one was to follow the social habits and tradition blindly. The other one was to follow a personality just because of you like him in one regard, then you think that that personality is the most perfect human being on the planet and you follow him in all other respects. And I said, we can see some level of this in the celebrity culture nowadays. And then another obstacle on the way of reason is conceit and arrogance, we talked about. Another obstacle on the way of reason is following the conjecture, following probabilities and possibilities, not the thing that is established. So you have on one hand, I don't know, the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the intelligent design and everything. Like the probability of this is too high, and I don't know that this everything would be the result of accident. It doesn't make sense. At the end of the day, mathematically it's possible, but at the end of the day it's just a very, very tiny possibility. Then some people, or other arguments in favor of belief, as we said in some other episodes, but at the end of the day, people, you find them, you want to follow their conjecture. Conjecture means that just because there's a possibility, just because it's possible, then, well, it's possible, but what is the evidence for that? If there's anything like that, does that thing, does that God, I don't know, send any messengers, any revelation, any way to the unseen world? So people follow their conjectures just to fight against the truth. and against their own reason. We will follow this discussion, inshallah, in the next episode. Until then,
wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.